Hello, I'm here during the lunch rush with Janice, who owns her own food truck.
Best cheesesteaks in town.
Janice traded up to Geico Commercial Auto Insurance for her food truck business. We're here where she needs us most.
They sure are.
We make it so easy for her to save, with customised coverage that grows with her business. Sorry, I just get so emotional talking about saving folks money.
Not this onion I'm chopping?
It's just so beautiful. Oh, yeah, nice, the onion.
Get a commercial auto insurance quote today at geico.com and see how much you could save. Get more with Geico.
Hello and welcome to Those Forking Fangirls, where we talk all things nerdy book, TV, movie, pop culture, and how they integrate into our adult lives. I'm Christine.
And I'm Natasha.
And today we're going to be discussing the longevity of fandom and how some fandoms tend to be seasonal, like Stranger Things, some burn hard and fast, like Divergent, The Maze Runner, and some are evergreen. You know, we've got our Star Wars, our Gilmore Girls, our Potter, Lord of the Rings. Mm. And then we have the ones that, like, expand and explode unexpectedly into new dimensions, like Sarah J. Maas. Some that implode on in themselves a little bit, like Game of Thrones. We're going to be deep diving into all of that. We're very excited.
Yes. But first, today we have a very special guest. Woo-hoo! Our new kick-ass social media manager, Chloe.
Sorry, I wrote that.
All good.
Don't apologize. Kick-ass is correct.
Kick-ass.
It sounded weird coming out of Natasha's mouth.
I'm just reading the words that Christine wrote me, okay? Chloe, can you give us a little introduction to who you are? What do you do? Where do you come from? Just fill us in on your favorite fandoms as well.
Hi, besties. Thanks, y'all, for having me on. I'm from San Diego, California. I'm a California girl. I am also French-American, so I speak French. I put in the doc, I'm exactly like the other girls and very proud of it. Very, very proud of it. I own a social media marketing agency, Creative by Chloe, which is why I'm here. And I specifically specialize in social media for podcasts. I kind of like fell into that. So some of y'all might know me as MuggleCast social media manager. I'm also on the show pretty often, which is, you know, amazing. I'm also a content creator myself. I talk about everything y'all talk about, right? Like fandom, fashion, a lot of Harry Potter, a lot of Taylor Swift. So if that's your jam, come hang out with me and be my best friend. And I'm Chloe Laverson everywhere. But my fandoms are Harry Potter, like I said, and Marauders as well, if you're a Marauders girly. Taylor Swift, Avatar The Last Airbender,
yes.
Fourth Wing, which is like my newest fandom, Percy Jackson, Twilight, and I'm like aggressively Team Jacob. So if anyone else is aggressively Team Jacob, and then Barbie is also one of my big fandoms. My Hogwarts house is Slytherin, okay? And I'm super proud. His motherfuckers. And Avatar The Last Airbender, I'm probably fire. Oh my god, is that really chaotic? Ooh. People are already like, okay, so she's evil. Great.
I'm air.
You're air? That checks.
I'm also Slytherin. Actually, I have no idea what my Avatar Airbender. How do I find that out?
I feel like you feel it in your soul. I might like do some analyzing and let you know. I'll
text
you.
Maybe Natasha's water.
I am a Pisces.
You're a Pisces? Then you're water for sure.
She's got some Katara
are you okay?
Energy. I can't talk. Katara energy. What's happening to my mouth?
That's just, it's just a regular day for me. I have to say, yesterday we hung out, Christy and I were hanging out together yesterday with our other friends, Taya and Liam, and it was very funny to watch her through the scope of somebody else because they're like experiencing all these things about her that I'm very used to. And it's just like so fun to see how people like are enjoying my best friend as much as I do. But it's so Christine. Normal for me.
I love it. Okay, T, I'm going to expose myself. I've been following Christine since I was like 11.
That's so cool.
Isn't that cool?
Thank you.
And when you came on to Millennial, I was like, oh my God, is that Christy? I had a starstruck moment, and then I took a step back and I was like, no, we'll be friends. And then we became friends and now we work together. Life is cuckoo bananas when you follow Poland Bananas.
Thanks. Make sure you're following the At Those Working Fangirls Instagram, TikTok. Now they're rocking.
Do it or else.
And subscribe on the YouTube channel because the reels are going up there too. And also our visual version is there. We have a YouTube version of every single episode. We're going to roll ourselves into Snap, Crackle, Pop Culture news because we've got some shit to talk about. Taylor Swift heavy as usual. But before that, Natasha, give us your news.
Okay, this is good stuff. The AMPTP is meeting with SAG on the 24th. So by the time this episode's already aired, they've already met. We are praying for good news. They are having a bunch of studio executives also attend this meeting. It looks like they mean business. They want to get this shit done. Like, we are hoping for good stuff.
I'm hopeful that Hollywood's going to reopen and they're not going to be dicks like last time and they came to the table with less.
They'll still be dicks. They'll still be dicks, but
hopefully less dickish.
Less dickish.
Rolling into today and Taylor Swift news. Chloe, you want to give us some?
Yes. Okay. So me glued to my phone every Sunday now. Taylor was at the Chiefs Chargers game. Taylor wore a friendship bracelet with 87 on it for Travis's jersey number and two hearts. And this is like such a like nice, classy friendship bracelet. This is not like a Michaels friendship bracelet situation. This is fancy AF. It is gorgeous. And I am so obsessed with them. Like, the photo of them leaving together that gives cheerleader, quarterback, everyone's like, oh my God, what are they doing?
It's totally You Belong With Me.
It is so You Belong With Me, but like the less internally misogynistic version.
Yes. The modernized version
where the cheerleader is also like really kind and and we like her.
Yes.
But I have been so invested in this relationship, as I'm sure the two of you have been. I'm like eating up every tweet, TikTok, photo.
Yes.
It's like honestly so unhealthy and like I need help. I think like the one thing that has really changed my mind with Travis and Taylor is how I feel about Brittany Mahomes. I feel like she was really villainized in the media before. This is sports lore, I guess, but I love that the Brittany like Taylor relationship.
Should we explain who she is?
Sure. Brittany Mahomes is the wife of Patrick Mahomes, who is the quarterback of the Kansas City Chiefs. Travis and Patrick are BFFs. So it makes sense for Taylor, who's dating Travis now, to be BFFs with Brittany. But their handshake, I thought, was so cute. And I just like think it gives like such sisterhood, like girls vibes. And people online were like, oh, that's cringy. And I'm like, F you. Like, I want a handshake with Taylor Swift.
Why would that be cringy in any world?
I just think it's the cutest thing ever. It gave like Parent Trap a little bit. I just loved it.
It did.
Yes, it for sure.
It did. It gave like my peak like girlhood, middle school, high school times where I had secret handshakes with my BFF.
We should have a secret handshake. Okay, when
we meet in person
next week or a couple weeks, then we'll make one and we'll record
handshake.
It for social. There you go.
Yes.
Do you guys all the moment where like Travis took like a big fall as he was trying to get the ball and she was
when Taylor popped up
she
out
was
of the frame.
So worried.
That's her man. That's her man.
She's so, it gives love. It gives love, and I'm living vicariously.
Yeah, we've seen her talk to Travis Kelce's mom, and we've lip read that she's like, I don't know how you do it. It's so stressful, because it is so stressful being a mom, watching your dude, your boy, get tackled and hurt all the time. And I hated that about sports when it was like my family. I'm just like, don't hurt them.
Someone pointed out that Brittany sprayed champagne in freezing cold weather all over a ton of fans. Yes, that is not lore, but Brittany is having a redemption arc, and I love that for her. We all grow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, and did she do that with the villainous intent, or was it just a dumb move? I mean,
probably, hopefully dumb, right?
It just sounds like a dumb mistake. She thought she was doing something fun.
Thought she was being fun, and then everyone was sticky and cold. That sounds like my worst nightmare, honestly.
So Travis, this past week, bought a $6 million home in his hometown city, I think Kansas City, Missouri, for more privacy with Taylor Swift, basically, because the paparazzi were very easily able to keep tabs on and watch his house now. Apparently, they're both all in. You know, they're both falling for each other. He bought her a house after like a month.
Did he buy her a house? I mean, or like, did he buy himself a Dojo Casa house for her?
Himself a Mojo Dojo Casa house for Taylor Swift time.
It is a Mojo Dojo Casa house. Everyone needs to go look it up. He's actually from Cleveland, but I think that he has spent so much time on the Kansas City Chiefs that like that is like also home for him.
There's another report that he's like ready to spend time with Taylor on the European leg of her tour, so he might be coming with her for a bit, which is so boyfriend, so serious.
Katie said, damn, rich people dating is something else. It's so true. Everyone's talking about the New Heights podcast, which Travis and his brother is on, and I love it. And they talk a lot about Taylor.
Do you listen to the entire episode?
No.
I know. Yeah, I see clips on Twitter.
I just see the highlights of Taylor. I saw someone reference Jason as like Miss Whistledown. Lady Whistledown. He's a Lady Whistledown of our fandom.
I love him so much. He is just such a sweetheart. Both of them are really just incredible men. I hope that they are endgame, because Taylor would be joining a family that is just so full of love, and she deserves that.
Yeah, she does. Yeah. Before we get into our main discussion, wow, I almost started talking with a weird accent just for shits and giggles there. I want to let everyone know my third book is available for pre-order. It's called Attached at the Hip. It is a Survivor-esque rom-com where our lead ends up on this show, a Survivor spinoff, where she's attached by 8 feet of rope to her high school crush that she never pursued. And it's an exciting time. And pre-orders are really important. So if you want to support my author life, the pre-order link is in the show notes.
I pre-ordered, so you should.
Me too.
Thank you. And this is our birthday episode. Those 14 Fangirls is 1 year old today. Woo-hoo. Our first episode was birthed a year ago, and I wore this same shirt. Boom.
I know. This morning, she's like, have you noticed?
She's like you're supposed to remember.
I'm wearing the same shirt.
Did you remember?
No.
No, I
didn't. Yeah, there's no way.
I think I edited that episode, so I stared at this shirt for a long time. We're going to roll into our main discussion, but first we have to take a second to thank everyone listening. We appreciate your listenership so much. If you've been here for the full year, or if you back listened to the year, thank you for being here with us on this first year journey. If you haven't yet, all our episodes are available for free on all of your favorite podcasting platforms, and you can follow us for free on those platforms so that you get each episode sent to you every week so you don't miss one. And like I said, we have a YouTube channel with the visual version where you can see my turtleneck every week at youtube.com.
You do look beautiful in the turtleneck. It's a nice color on you. Everyone should know.
We also, if you want to support the podcast in a bigger way, for our birthday, actually, if you want to leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, if you like the pod, we would love that. If you want to rate us really quickly for free on Spotify, you can give us 5 stars in like 0.1 second. If you want to support us in a bigger way, we have a Patreon, patreon.com/thoseworkingfangirls, linked in the show notes. And this is a viewer-supported podcast and we have a lot of fun perks over there. We can do this because of y'all. And our biggest, well, most regular perk is at the $5 level. We do Fangirl Tea Time, an extra half an hour show every single week. Then we've got our Team Jacob level, which is our mid-tier. We have a bonus episode every month that goes there.
Love that.
We have our top, our top tier, Team Polis Bananas. And on Team Polis Bananas, you can be a guest on the show. Last week, we had one of our Team Polis Bananas patrons on the show, Shots, and it was a grand old time. And we also do fangirl bonding sessions every month. We meet and hang out and chat on that tier. So lots of cool stuff. Link is in the show notes if you want to check it out. We'd really appreciate it.
I'm excited to come to the next bonding sesh. I didn't realize that y'all did that.
They are so much fun. Okay, so like I said, we're talking longevity of fandoms. There's so much to cover. I want to open this up to y'all by asking what you think is the core ingredient for a long-lasting, healthy fandom, other than great, enjoyable content. Because a lot of things are fantastic and enjoyable and don't have a fandom that lasts years and years and years on end.
I think that when I think about a long-lasting fandom, it needs to grow and evolve with its audience, period. Like, you need to feel like you are constantly getting something new out of it. If a fandom remains stagnant and there's nothing new to talk about or theorize about or, like, just really, like, dig into, then you're gonna get bored. I think that also having like a relatability and emotionally compelling story and characters, that's really important as well. Like, you need to feel like you see yourself in a character, or you want to see yourself in a character, like something to aspire to, or, you know, maybe you want a character, you know, there has to be some sort of like emotional draw and pull. I also think fans need to stay fed, like whether that's social content, fan created editions, whatever, like the ability to buy into and like show your fandoms off, whether it's through fan created merch or through, like, I think we're going to talk about conventions later. Like, there needs to be more to do than just like digesting the canon.
Yeah, I love what you're saying. I feel like we have to be consistently fed for over 3 years. Like, that's part of the formula, or else it's not going to last as long. And I love what you said about the content evolving with us. I think Rick Riordan has done a really good job of evolving his content through the years. And the Percy Jackson fandom just has so much potential to explode into a whole new realm once the show starts. And Sarah J. Maas's books, I feel like, have evolved a shitload through the years. Like, she's really dug into different types of characters, deeper, darker worlds. They've gotten much sexier. We've gotten like a lot YA
literally
authors.
Get older. They literally got older with their fans. And I think that's why we see Potter and Percy Jackson staying around 10 plus years, 20 plus years after the initial releases, because say you were 11 when the Harry Potter books came out, you literally grew up with Harry. And I think that was probably the experience of you, Christine, and like a lot of people, but you felt like you got older with them and you matured with them. And like, I strongly feel like the first three books of Harry Potter are children's chapter books, like, and four is middle grade, and then the rest are young adults. Like, they really span different like genres, I'd argue, or categories, and that's really special and important. And like, I think that also expanding like into spin-offs and telling different character stories, and like those fandoms can stick around because the fans are constantly getting new content, sometimes from other fans, not just the author, right?
When a piece of fiction can inspire work in every corner of the creative world, that is when you have a rich fandom. When it's like people, you know, using any type of skill that they have to enrich or bring more content to a fandom, like fan fiction, art, cosplay, people in who like want to make a video game and who are the driving force behind that, and people who see something really amazing, they're like, let's make this into a film. Like, that is all very helpful.
What you were saying about like the Harry Potter books basically being different genres as we got older reading them, I kind of have felt a little slapped in the face by Percy Jackson recently reading the newest book, because I loved that Percy was getting older through the books. I loved that we got a more mature Percy in the Percy Jackson, and not the Percy Jackson, the Olympians, the Heroes of Olympus series. Mm-hmm. He was 16 and everything just felt a little bit older. And then in this newest book, they make a reference about millennials, like Percy Jackson isn't one of them. And I was like, whoa. Like completely taken back. And then I went and Googled it, and Rick had said something about like Percy lives in where time doesn't move the same way. And he is like perpetually the age he is until, I mean, it was so weird to me. And I was like, I don't know if this is the right move because,
but
I
know they're resetting
the fan. He is. He just turned 30 or something, or 28 or something. He's definitely a millennial,
but a cusper.
But I was, to comment on millennials, like he wasn't close to them.
One thing I will say though about like Percy Jackson and the Potter series and like all of those that have stayed around and stayed popular, I think the biggest thing for me is that they feel safe. They're not scary. Like, I'm not scared of the world that either of those authors have built, and the fans are also like have created such a beautiful, accepting and loving community. If I don't feel safe in a world, or I don't like feel safe in a fandom, I'm gonna stop, even if I really like the characters, like, because I'm digesting media, books, etc., to escape. And if I feel more stressed or just as stressed as I do in the real world, then it's not going to stick around.
I fully agree with that. I think like that'll come later.
We can go into that. I feel like, because I feel like Twilight is such a safe community.
Truly.
I love that fandom because they're so welcoming and so accepting and generous with their support and kindness. And I always feel safe in there.
Yeah, there's, I mean, like toxic fans can really make it or break it. I think like a really good example is Star Wars. For a long time, like women have never really felt safe. And like they've gone as far as even, you know, scaring the actresses off of social media because the hate has just been so terrible. And I feel like I stay in like a little small corner with my like my Reylo fantasies, and I know that there's like a huge Reylo fandom out there.
So
obviously
much.
we've gotten so many books published because of Reylo.
I feel like you would do such a good Rey cosplay as like a total side note. Like, unless you've already done one, but you would
slay that.
Oh, I'm excited. I'll go look.
I did a dark Rey like a couple years ago. I had this idea of like mashing Reylo with like Pride and Prejudice and doing like a, like a Regency Rey costume. So that's still in the back of my head. But yeah, so toxic fans, that's the hard part.
I feel like that also made me jump right out of Star Wars the second I tried to like dip a toe in. I was starting to get into Star Wars because of Reylo, and I really loved that. I really loved the new characters. And then there was so much toxic shit about there's being too many female characters and how Rian Johnson was ruining the Star Wars fandom. And it was just like, I did not want to be in there.
That is so, icky.
Yeah. It was Rey, Rose, Laura Dern, Princess Leia, or Senator Organa, and then Gwendolyn Christie. Is that her name?
Oh my God, I would die for her.
And BB-8 wasn't a girl, even though it was such like female bonding energy I felt from BB-8.
I would have loved if BB-8 was like, a girl. I would have loved why did they make BB-8 female robot male representation.
I feel like the joy should be genderless. I think also I believe that having like a central place to fangirl about fandom with other fans is very important. And it has been the thing that has driven so much of like any fandom community that I've been a part of. So do you think like an event-based activity, like a convention, festival, gathering are important to nurture a fandom? And has there been an event that has reignited your love for a certain fandom?
This might be controversial. I don't necessarily think they're important to nurture a fandom. Mm. I think they're important to nurture your love for a fandom.
True.
But I think that because maybe COVID and some other things, we live online and we have learned how to create such beautiful communities online through podcasting, through YouTube, like through all of these, you know, social media platforms and different media like avenues, that I think an event is an amazing, amazing way to meet new people, like Comic-Con and all these other places. But it's also really expensive and sometimes inaccessible to, well, a lot of the times inaccessible to the majority of the fandom. So while I think that it can add so much to your like love of the fandom and can like be really meaningful, I don't think it's important or necessary. Like, I don't want anyone to feel like you are getting less of the fandom experience if you're not able to go to a convention or a festival, because you can, I think, get the same level of integration and the same level of like deep connection online nowadays.
But I do think that it does reignite fandoms that maybe have not gotten anything new in a long time. But it's such a good point that there are so many communities online now where you can foster your love of fandom, and even for something that's been a long time, like Twilight.
Like, it's a really cool perk. It's a really, really cool extra perk.
Like, going to the Forever Twilight Forks Festival in 2016 and seeing all the places where Twilight filmed really, I feel like, set me on a path to like digging into that part of me again, the part of me that loves Twilight that was kind of, you know, we were made fun of it for liking it for a really long time. And then going to a place where everyone unapologetically is so excited about these books and these characters again was so refreshing after years of just being around so many people that just shit all over it. And I was just on defense all the time. All these people, and I can only compare this to like Taylor, because all the people who love Twilight all were so rabidly consuming every single drop of content. So like everyone in the room at the Forever Twilight Forks Festival like knows exactly what interview you're referencing when you're like this one at this time. Like this picture from the set, like everyone knows that picture. Everyone was collectively stalking it on the internet. And they're so passionate. Like, we all know all the merch. We were there. We bought it. We can reference it. It's really fun and unhinged in the best way. I know Potter had aspects of this, but the computer was too new for a lot of people, I feel like, to be connecting.
Connecting. I feel like MuggleNet.
Didn't even know about fan boards and stuff.
Yeah, well, it was so new. It was so new. I think we credit Harry Potter for starting what Twilight finished in terms of that.
Yeah.
Harry Potter, like, started the fan boards, MuggleNet. But I was thinking, and listen, I'm Gen Z. I was alive, but I was not on the internet while this was happening. But I've heard stories of the fact that you could go to She Who Must Not Be Named website and like do puzzles and figure out hints and like, you know, like get answers and clues and reveal like secrets about the next book. And Taylor literally just did that with Google, like the vault. Figuring out the vault's songs. So like that is like basically the same thing in my mind. Like I think that we haven't seen what we're seeing with Taylor since Twilight and since Harry Potter. I didn't actually I was growing up with Percy, and I don't think Percy Jackson did that either. Like, I can't remember beyond Twilight and Harry Potter.
With Percy, it was a younger audience, and I don't feel like it expanded as far as Potter did in terms of adults reading it. And with Potter, I think a lot of us were too young and fresh to the internet. Like, there was a core group of people there, but I didn't know there were puzzles on her website. I liked, like, computer stuff, and it just wasn't as easily spread. Like, Taylor Swift, fucking everywhere. You couldn't avoid those fault puzzles. Everyone knew about it. Everyone was talking about it, but there were no socials to spread it. So there was no way to find out unless you knew someone who was super computer savvy in, like, 2005 even. I discovered podcasts in 2006, like, and I was considered, like, the tech nerd of my, like, group of friends.
Well, the internet has evolved so much, and I think the reason that Taylor is as big as she is because of the internet and because of social media and, like, how that has changed. I mean, I think about, you know, the really impactful, huge stars of the past, like Michael Jackson, for example, probably had the same amount of fame as Taylor Swift, but we're not seeing the level of we're not perceiving it the same way because we have so much documented all the time with Taylor. Every time she breathes, we hear about it. And, like, awesome, that's really cool. Yeah. But, like, you know, like, it's very different now.
Yeah. And with Taylor, she really does, like, that key. It really is very much key to evolve with your fan base. And Taylor has done an amazing job of doing that and evolving with the way technology is and the way music is released. She got older and started including drinking and sex and all that stuff into her songs, like, when she became, like, a full-blown adult. Like, it was rated G in the beginning. It's really funny how that's evolved.
I mean, the Eras Tour, like, if I think of it as a marketer, is so brilliant because she has an era for everyone. If you like country, if you like indie, if you like pop, like, she has something that you can relate to and you can love. So even if you don't like every single album, you can't hate Taylor Swift because you have, like, a touch point. It's brilliant. The way that she has changed and evolved for her audience, and the way that she brings back her old stuff so that people know that it's, like, it's still her, but it's, like, a different version of her. Like, that is so cool. Yeah.
Would you say the, like, her concert, like, let's just take Eras Tour, was important for us Swifties to, like, nurture us and kind of bring us into the next level?
I do. And I think the way that she has made it more accessible is so telling about, first of all, how much she cares about her fans. And also, she did, like, so many people couldn't afford the Eras Tour and didn't go. That I was one of those people. Like, I got to go to the movie and experience it. And it was so beautiful and so special. And it felt just like, I mean, probably not just like going, but I don't know. I mean, there's a few other artists that have done that, but it's never felt like this. It never has felt like she cares about the fans having access. And that's what social media has done. So I do think the Eras Tour was important to nurture her audience. And she did it in a way where everyone could get a piece. And that is like the best part.
Yeah. I think one of the most special things about Taylor and her fandom is that she goes out of her way to make sure that everyone feels seen and heard and understood. She's been doing that since the beginning of time. Like, her songs did it first, but then she went out of her way to personally do it with fans, and she does that consistently over and over again. She herself was, like, the girl who felt invisible, the girl who, you know, the guys never looked at. And now, you know, everyone's looking at her, but she's making sure that, like, everyone that is in her fandom feels like she sees them, like, you know, commenting on their stuff, inviting them to the premiere, for years doing the parties where she invites them to her house. Like, she goes out of her way to make everyone feel special. And even Travis Kelce, who like talked about her on his podcast, and she was like, oh, like she doesn't just brush True. It off. She's like,
Travis
oh,
was
he's
a fan
interested.
First. Travis was a fan
I'm
first.
I'm going to give him the time of day. Like, I want to talk to him. Let's spend time together. Like, she's so open-minded about people and encouraging, and it's beautiful.
So I'm going to move us into the next question, which is, yes. What do you think is the biggest danger to a fandom's longevity, in your opinion?
For me, I feel like there's two key things that like murder fandoms all the time. One of them is a bad last book. And this happens all too yep. often in like so a trilogy true. That started off so strong. Mm-hmm. Like, I think to back up this theory, I'm going to talk about Divergent. Divergent was a fucking banger. That book was on fire in so many ways. It's so philosophically stimulating as a young adult. It's full of nonstop action. Like, it was the fourth wing of its time. All right. But the final book, like, we were, none of us liked the final book. None of us liked how she ended it. We left with a bad taste in our mouth with Allegiant. Mm. And then we went into the Divergent movie, which kind of reignited us because they're like, oh, they did a good job with it. And yeah. then Insurgent, they didn't give a shit about anything, it felt like. It was so weird and different. And then Allegiant was very bad. And we didn't even get the last movie. And that was like the final nail in the coffin of the Divergent fandom, which makes me so sad because that book got so many people to read. Yeah. That was the book that I pumped to everyone that I was trying to get into reading. And then all of them would love it and come to me asking for more. Like, it was mm-hmm. just, I love rereading that book. I have references to it in my new book because I'm like, I miss Divergent.
That's the coolest part about being an author, though, right? Like, you get, you're like, I miss this thing, so I'm going to reference it because it's my book.
Yeah. And then the other thing that obviously murders it is a bad adaptation, what I just said. And that has happened
so many times.
So many times. You know, a fan is really strong when they can survive a shitty adaptation. Like Percy yeah. Jackson, we had two shitty movies mm-hmm. and then the Broadway play, which a lot of people thought was good, but I did not at all. And I was very sad coming out of there because it was very creepy watching full adults try to play 11-year-olds or 12-year-olds. I was like, oh my God, I can't.
Yeah, I would let Logan Lerman step on me, though. And I'd say, thank you so much. I'd say, thank you so much. Do it again.
So...
Yes, the adaptations are terrible, but sometimes I'm like, I need a little Logan Lerman in my life, so I'm gonna watch the first one.
Oh my God, you watch that for Logan Lerman? You can watch something else, though.
Because I feel like when I went to see the movie in theaters, I was like, oh, yum. And I feel like it was my first time where I was like, ooh, yum. Point is he's hot. And that's why I watch
yes,
it. But I'm excited for a better adaptation.
Have you seen the movie where he plays, like, he wants to be a writer and he loves Stephen King? I watched that Logan Lerman movie
okay.
a lot.
No, but I will now. Logan Lerman. I guess I know what I'm doing tonight. Thanks. Him with the gray, like, he has now, like, salt and pepper hair. And it is to die for. He is to die for.
He looks good.
Like I said, step on me, daddy.
I also wanted to give some kudos to the Mortal Instruments fandom because we have had a lot of mediocre shit. Yeah.
Mediocre? That's generous as fuck.
I am being generous. We all know that we were very unhappy with the adaptations we've had there. And I still have hope that someday... Because Cassie keeps churning out amazing shit mm-hmm. that we will get another she shot does. From a company that's willing to give it the attention
Clockwork Angel
that it deserves and the budget that it deserves.
I will say, I do think that the Mortal Instruments TV show got Izzy correct. That's the only thing I think they got right.
Emerald was great.
I think about her all the time. And I'm like, I don't know if I want to be you or be with you, but... I love it.
Is she your Roman Empire?
No, she's not my Roman Empire. I meant it when I said Tolerate It by Taylor Swift is my Roman Empire, because it is.
I have to say, Melissa wrote down, she goes, I feel like adaptations are based on the script writer mm-hmm. and who they choose for the full production crew. You either have a full crew that is really excited to adapt something or a crew that's indifferent and kind of after the potential money draw of it. And I fully agree.
It's all about money.
Because a great example of this is Lord of the Rings.
Yep.
We had Peter Jackson and a full cast, by the way, who are still best friends, still love each other, still hang out, still talk about this experience that they had because they filmed all three movies back to back. And it was like a crazy experience for everyone involved.
You know why I think they got so much money and like care and attention? Because so many dudes like Lord of the Rings. Dudes have money and the dudes have the power
But women have money.
I talk about this.
Women have money and women like have affected the economy so much recently.
Yes.
Like take women's interests seriously.
Recently?
Also, can I flex for a second?
Yes.
I met Elijah Wood at LeakyCon in August.
Oh,
and
LeakyCon?
He was. So LeakyCon has grown to beyond Harry Potter. So it's really just like a fantasy con now with like a heavy emphasis on Potter, obviously, because that's what it's known for. But we were in the same green room. I also met Tom Felton. Look at me. I'm flexing on everyone. But I know.
Nice.
I know. But he is the sweetest man and he's so beautiful. And he also has a little salt and pepper and he's slaying. He also is like very tiny. But it was so cool.
Yes.
And Sean Astin was there too and they like love each other. And they were like, they couldn't obviously talk about, they couldn't say the name of like Lord of the Rings. So they were like, this movie that we were in that, you know, no, it's like they were like this thing that we did that was fantasy. It was a lot, but it was so good. It was so good.
That's amazing. I fell in love with him watching Dirk Gently's Holistic Detective
He's
Agency.
So cute.
He's wonderful.
We love a short king. Yes, we do, yes. Melissa. Daniel Radcliffe is also a short king, and they look like each other. Oh. And it's like that maybe is also my Roman Empire. I think about it a lot.
But yeah, just in the year 2000, we were living in such a patriarchal mindset with like girls turned against girls constantly. Like I'm not like other girls.
I'm not like other girls. Yes, that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And we just did everything that, without realizing it, we were just really playing into, like, the patriarchy. It's super hard.
Misogyny, yeah.
Honestly, selfishly, I love that. First of all, I love living in a world where liking Taylor Swift is cool because it wasn't for so long.
Yeah.
And, like, I was made fun of for so long. I also love living in a world where I can be as girly and as pink as I want to be without people being like, really? Like, that's a lot. Or like, are you being performative? Like, I love that. And I think our next step is like being taken seriously as feminine women.
Yeah.
But it's been really cool to see.
Yeah.
And like really healing.
Yeah. I think Twilight, really, the world doesn't give it enough credit for it starting. I think that's when people start to take what teenage girls like seriously.
Yeah.
And not seriously
enough.
Like, they gave us some money to make all these YA movies, but didn't take a lot of them, like, seriously enough.
Seriously.
Yeah, yep. But it broke down the barrier of like, oh, maybe we should pay attention to what they're reading because we meant to make money. And now it's like, oh, like, they are a force to be reckoned with, and we need to put tender love and care into this shit and foster it. Like, I feel like it's really started that progression.
Okay, wait. Gabby just said, hold the phone. Photo of Taylor kissing Travis's...
No! Where?
Ah, it's the first thing on my Instagram.
Here wait, it is. Taylor Nation.
Oh, my gosh.
It's so cute. Oh, my God. He's so much taller than her.
He is so tall. She's, like, stretching to his cheek, and he's leaning down. Oh,
she's
my
so
gosh.
Beautiful.
We never get clear kisses pictures.
Someone said pictures in frames of kisses on cheeks.
I know. That's what this says. That's the caption on this. If you're watching the visual version, I'm holding up a picture of the picture. Really quick to wrap this up, I just wanted to also point out The Fifth Wave, which had an amazing first book, died because the second book was met and the movie was a whole big nothing burger and it just fell apart. Chloe, did you have something to add, or Natasha, to why fandoms die?
Oh, problematic authors.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I was like, just kidding. Not really, though.
I think the fandom can outgrow an author
yes,
and become their own entity.
I literally said that. I said that. Fans, if there's a problematic author, which is the case for a lot of books pre, honestly, 2010, if we're honest. Fans need to be allowed to make it their own and like build a vibrant community. And that's why they stick around. But if they have a problematic author, they definitely won't stick around. If the fans don't like take it and run with it. Yeah. My favorite thing about the Harry Potter books is like when people are like, oh my God, aren't you so glad that Emma Watson wrote the Harry Potter book? Or I make the joke sometimes. I'm like, aren't you so glad MuggleCast wrote the Harry Potter book? It's like disassociating for myself. If I'm honest. Mm-hmm.
I think John Green says it really nicely. I don't know the exact quote, but I mean, he's like, once the book is published, it's not mine anymore. It's everyone else's, you know, everyone
that's beautiful.
Makes it their own. Yeah. He's has a way with words and said it better, but it's that idea.
Katie say Rick Riordan will remain my unproblematic fave. Oh yeah. He's perfect. If every author could be him, that would be great.
I put down like public perception, I think, can make a big difference. Like we saw that in Twilight, which I think leads great into our next question, Christine.
Yeah. So I wanted to discuss why we think Twilight kind of went so hard so fast. Now it simmers on low in the backdrop. Like it's still here and it had a bit of a renaissance. But if you compare it to
the Gen
Potter,
Z Twilight Renaissance.
If you compare it to Potter, which has been going pretty solid for 25 years, despite like a lot of controversy, like before we had our author being super problematic, we had all of the stuff with like the religious community trying to burn Harry Potter to the ground, basically, with...
I was a part of that.
Yeah.
Not really, but, like, I was told not to read it because I would...
Oh, my God, no.
Yes.
It's very sad.
Natasha Lore. Oh, my goodness gracious. Okay, well, we're going to talk about that in person.
What do we think was the difference there with Twilight that it went down pretty fast in the amount of people that were screaming about it, Natasha?
Well, like we said earlier, it was a first of its kind. It was a truly female-based audiences, and droves of us went to the movie theater to go watch it, and everyone was so excited about it. But then we were made to feel stupid for loving it. Mm-hmm. So, and we kind of like let that like misogynistic viewpoint skew our opinions.
Oh,
and
so many people's
like,
opinions.
Like, yeah. And we're like,
not
it's
us.
Stupid. Like, why would I love Twilight?
We were made loyal.
So many people in our lives kind of fell off because it wasn't. The misogyny of it.
It was like a mob mentality of people being like, you're dumb and frivolous if you like Twilight. Mm-hmm. And then people, like smart people around me, all these women who were so excited after they read Twilight, as soon as the movie came out and everyone was talking about it in such a poor light, dropped off so fast. And being called dumb, because I was assumed to be dumb because of just like being blonde growing up, which was so
and like how you were perceived
and being excited. And I know that's changed a bit. I feel like it's kind of still there a little bit.
Has it?
I know it's changed, like outwardly we don't have words, we don't have songs like I don't want to be a stupid girl like with her hair bleached blonde, like that was the stupid girl.
I think women perceive us in a better light, and I think men still don't take us seriously.
Yeah, I agree with that.
I also think like the world could and should be expanded more.
Yes.
Because there's
yes.
so much
yes
that like people have just taken and also run with it. Like we just need more, and I think we'll be fed.
Yeah.
No, 100%. We really only saw vampires and werewolves. And my assumption when I meet a vampire and a werewolf in a world is that there are other creatures and like a more expansive, you know, lore to this world that exists within the real world. And I was really hoping that she would like not necessarily make it a magical world, but, you know, continue to build on that. I felt like that would have absolutely grown the fandom. And I also think that what she did write, like Life and Death, Twilight, like the Twilight Reimagined, and then the Brie Tanner novella, and then Midnight Sun, it was all within Twilight. Like Brie Tanner was really the only one that was like different, at least a little, mm-hmm. but Life and Death and Midnight Sun were the same exact story, just like reimagined from a different perspective.
Well, Life and Death. And
I just thought, well, it was gender. Yeah, no, it gave us more.
She gave us more at the end of that book.
For sure. She gave us more. But I wanted like a spinoff. Yeah. I wanted maybe like Volturi. I wanted like maybe we focus on the werewolves for a series. Like, I just think that she kept it in the same frame. And I wish she had extended mm-hmm. the frame.
She gives us kernels that there's more. Like, mm-hmm. they're not even werewolves. We learn that they're shapeshifters. So that opens true. Up a yeah. whole new, like, box of worms that we didn't get to delve into in terms of, like, what are werewolves then? Because we mm-hmm. kind of, she talks about, like, werewolves can only turn into wolves, but shapeshifters can turn into different things. Like, there are the kernels of a much more fleshed out world, but, yeah, she hasn't given it
but
to us
But we don't get
yet.
To see it.
Yeah.
And I feel like... Mm-hmm. I don't know, like, maybe I'm not reading the right fan fiction, but I feel like I haven't seen fan fiction that has taken those kernels and, like, really expanded it. And I would love that, and I think that would honestly reinvigorate the Twilight fandom. And I think they're doing a TV show, so obviously that will reinvigorate.
She also has a whole Renesmee Jacob series outlined, so... We're going to get that.
Interesting.
Someday. And I hope it's soon. I hope maybe it'll collide with the release of the television show that is in the process of being made. That would be beautiful.
That would be smart.
We moderated her event in 2018, and she like mm-hmm. dropped all these kernels about like this Renesmee Jacob book and Midnight Sun, and she hadn't talked about Midnight Sun in years. And then we got to interview her afterward without knowing that we were going to get to. And she dropped all of this information. And we're waiting for it. Like, Midnight Sun has come now.
Yeah.
And we know now that she said that there's an outline of, like, a 3-book arc for Renesmee and Jacob. Like, she's got to be working on it.
I would be obsessed. Have you seen this outline?
No,
you just know it exists. I don't know if she, sometimes she would take pictures of things and like, whatever. Okay. I would love to see.
She's learned her lesson.
There, probably. I would love to see them grow together and like see how their relationship shifts from like, honestly, caretaker from where we leave Twilight to like friends to then eventually lovers. Like, I really, because I feel like it has to be done so carefully too, so it's not creepy. So like, I really want to see that. But also, she's like ages, Renesmee ages really quickly, so I think that's probably what the book would be. But I'm really curious to see how she will transition their relationship.
I also think like it's a good time to release something new to the world with, you know, we're in year of the Barbie movie mm-hmm. and women taking over and the Renaissance that happened not too long ago. So I think it's a good time.
I want to know if there are any fandoms that don't have longevity, as much longevity in the like mainstream here, but if there's anything in your life that you love that has had such longevity in your personal world, and why is it so sticky and special for you? Do you think there's potential for it to come back around and catch fire in the mainstream culture again?
I put down Once Upon a Time, which has just burned so bright for so long. I kind of let it go, but then I revisited when I rewatched it. I'm like, This is so good. I love this show so much. I love it because it's just, I love Disney. And I love how magical, like, all the Disney fairy tales are and how it's, like, basically, like, Disney fan fiction as they, like, weave all these classic... Yeah.
It's so true.
They weave all these classic characters into, like, a fun new retelling. So that's my favorite thing about it. And I truly believe, like, it could come back. Like, this concept can come back. I don't think I want all the same characters, honestly. But I think with how... like technology has gotten better with the CGI and like the, I've been talking about this vehemently for a long time, but like how Mandalorian used those screens for like the backdrop. It could just be so much better outside of network TV as well. Like if it was just on a streamer or something.
I'm obsessed with that idea. And I'm obsessed that you said it was Disney fanfic because it so is. And I've never put that together, but I also love Once Upon a Time. I have never let go of Avatar: The Last Airbender. And I've just like held onto it so tight since I was a little girl. And then it had a sort of its own mini renaissance during the pandemic when it was released on Netflix. Since then, I've like really deep dived into the books and the comic.
I didn't even know there were books.
Oh my, yeah, no, exactly. They have like so, there is so much to the Avatar universe and obviously Korra as well. And I just love it so much. It like feels so safe and so comfy. Like if I'm going through a really hard time, Avatar The Last Airbender is like what I reach for. I'm really excited because there's about to be a live action TV show and the pictures that have come out are phenomenal so far. And I've really liked the majority of the casting. So your girl is real excited.
I really hope it's good.
I'm excited that like other people are going to start loving it like, as much as I have continued to.
For me, this is definitely Lost. Like I think definitely Avatar The Last Airbender is going to have like a huge burst of new people watching soon.
I'm excited.
And there's the new like spin-off series where we're going to see them as adults, which I'm so excited about because we kind of skipped that whole
era. So much coming. There's so much coming.
Yeah. Yes. But yeah, for me, it's Lost. Lost had such a profound effect on me as a storyteller. It's so fucking good. And I think one of the reasons why it still feels so, it doesn't feel aged at all when I watch it. I mean, in terms of like the storytelling and what's going on, I mean, maybe there are some themes. I'm rewatching them in season two. Maybe there are some themes that will come up that are like a little outdated, but I haven't gotten there yet. It's so well done. And I like, literally my first book is just full of Lost references because I didn't want that ever to leave at least my bubble here. Like I wanted to have it all down and documented that Lost is fantastic. And it's on streamers, and I think it could have a full Lost renaissance if it came back onto Netflix and they actually advertised it. Like, okay, Netflix put Manifest on there, which is a shitty version of something trying to be Lost. And people ate it up and were like, have you watched Manifest? And I'm like, I did watch Manifest, and it was bad.
It's bad.
All right, what it's you have bad. To watch
it's
is Lost.
Great.
Okay, Lost does this so well. It's so moving in so many different ways. It plays around so much with so many themes that I love, like the believing in something greater than like what logically is there, like believing in magic, basically. Mm. And it plays around with that in such a beautiful, profound way over and over again. And the redemption arcs, like, it's just beautiful. And a lot of people misunderstood Lost. Like, a lot of people won't watch it because they think the end was that they were all dead the whole time, which is completely wrong. And the fact that rumor spread pissed me off so much. Whenever I talk to someone, I'm like, have you watched Lost? And they're like, oh, I heard they were all dead the whole time. I'm like, shake you. They weren't. You're wrong. Someone was misinformed that told you that. Someone did not understand the show. But I think a key ingredient in having a show that people are so invested in is the layers that the showrunners put into it. And Lost is full of fucking layers. There are so many Easter eggs. And it's just like we see Taylor really have layers in all of her shit too. There's so many different connections and threads you can pull from all of her music. It's so layered. Same, Lost is just full of Easter eggs everywhere and full of connections and theories, and you can interpret things in so many different ways. Not the end. The end was not that they were all dead, but
I'm talking about, really, passionate about that.
I really am. So mad. But it's all about,
I think Alex just recently asked you about that and you had to explain it to
him. It's all about humans and how messy they are and how there's so much nuance, and I feel like that's still so relevant today. People love to just like see one thing that someone does wrong and be like, you're a fucking shithead, I never want to see you again, and cancel them. And it's just like, I'm not saying that canceling people isn't warranted sometimes, of course it is, but like, we've gotten so addicted to being like, this one mistake makes you forever like evil. And like, Loss is all about how nuanced humans are, how they can grow and learn and change and evolve, and it's done so well.
I think one thing that you said that is true about our earlier point, like what makes a fandom, well, this entire discussion, what makes a fandom stick around is the threads.
Yes.
The connections that you can find, what you can pull, like the foreshadowing, like the things that keep you like really thinking about it. Like that is, if you can find and connect the threads, like that is what makes you want to stay.
Yeah. Yeah, and you can find something new every rewatch of Lost. Like, and there's so much foreshadowing, not just in like the words they're saying, but like in the visuals and the way people act and react to things. It's so fun. When it's a good book or a good series, like a good show, like you're gonna get new things out of it over and over again, and that's why we love them so much. So, on the flip side of this, has there been a fandom that has petered out that you were really excited about? And are you still sad about it, that it hasn't kept its longevity in your life?
Yeah, I think Outlander burned hard and fast for me. The reason why, like, because I was like such an Outlander stan for so long and I loved it so hard. But honestly, it was too emotional. And heavy. It was heavy. A lot of terrible things happened to our favorite characters. And I would get so emotionally invested that it would wreck me like for a week. And I couldn't keep that going because I was also reading the books at the same time. And they're like 1,000-page books. And then I was then I would experience it reading it, and then I would experience it again, and I would kind of dread that experience of watching it and watching all this happen. And like, some major thing happened to one of the characters. I was like, I think I'm done. Like, I think I'm done with this. I feel unsafe, and
that
I don't need this.
That, you feel unsafe, and you left. That is so fucking real, bro. It resonates so hard with me. This second, I'm like, too emotional. Well, listen, I get too emotional over everything. So if I stopped everything because I got too emotional, I would literally not be in fandom. But Outlander, I do feel that. I do feel that.
Yeah. Sophie said she had the same experience. So I'm glad I'm not alone.
Yeah.
I dropped off of it because they had an actress on it that just doesn't live up to the actors around her at all. And it takes me out of every scene and I can't even watch it.
Listen, I thought it was going to be about some like hot Scottish man and like we fell in love with him. But then it was just too much.
It was extremely heavy stuff that they put our main characters through time and time and time again. So it's really understandable. Mm-hmm. So what are the more recent fandoms that you've jumped onto that are coming to the forefront of pop culture that you think are here to grow and flourish for years to come?
I think Fourth Wing, I have a lot of hope for it. Also, I really love dragons. Like, I'm just like such a slut for dragons. Is that a weird that a weird thing to say?
No, I can't say I'm a slut for things. It just doesn't come out of my mouth, but I would say that I feel similarly.
There's my Gen Z. I'm like, I would be slutty for dragons. I love the concept. I was a How to Train Your Dragon girly, and same. I grew up to be a Fourth Wing girly. I'm like playing with my hair like I'm embarrassed. Oh, I don't know. I was really
such a
I'm so into Fourth Wing. I have a lot of hope. I think that it could be really big if done well. Yep. We only have the first book though, so I don't want to set my expectations so high and then be so sad. But I'm obsessed with the world. I love the characters and I felt very empowered reading it.
Yeah. I have high hopes for book two because if the dialogue is fun, you're going to have a fun time in the majority of
fun.
The books.
It'll always be fun.
It's always going to be fun. I think Percy Jackson's prepped for a second coming of like pop culture excitement everywhere. Sarah J. Maas books have already exploded so far into the reading world. Like they're past just readers. Everyone's excited about them. But it still has so much potential because there is no adaptation yet. And I think that the fact that one hasn't come yet is probably good because we were not at a spot where they were going to give her the tools to make the adaptation what it needs to be. Like this is a rich fantasy world, so we need a big budget and people who are willing to care about every aspect of it and not just think of it as something that's going to make them money like so many of these adaptations have between 2010 and 2020 for anything that was remotely female based in audience. I am excited for the future there.
I definitely said Sarah J. Maas as well. I think Bridgerton, we're on our third season, but they've already expanded the show. And I think Bridgerton is an extremely perfect example of having like a female at the head, a showrunner. And this is exactly what Sarah J. Maas needs. She needs a showrunner who is just as enthusiastic and well-knowledge to be able to bring that world to fruition. And I think like Bridgerton is my Outlander if Outlander wasn't so like emotionally hurtful to me.
Love.
And I am so excited we finally have some plus size rep coming, and I'm waiting for the strike to end, and hopefully we'll have good news about the third season coming out. The streamer who owns it has done such amazing work of bringing this fandom together, as we've had the Bridgerton balls and even bringing like Queen Charlotte into the mix, and I feel like it maybe is at its peak.
I think it could still grow.
It still could grow because it's not going to be the same thing over and over again. We have a different kid every season with a whole different love story. Like it's just going to be so fun.
I want to get around to reading the books eventually.
Katie says, Natasha, you will read the books. I will die on this.
Girl, I am like so ready to read Penelope's book right now because I just need it like now.
I feel like Bridgerton could go on the same trajectory as Stranger Things, where like if they have a bad season, which I hope they never do, but even if they do, they could bring it back around and people can get super excited again because they are so creative with how they tell their story and shift to different characters. Like I never fell off Stranger Things, but I know a lot of people were less excited after season three, I think it was. And then season four, the whole world exploded again. Like Stranger Things had just come onto the scene when running up that hill, like the whole season was great, but like running up that hill, that scene got a lot of people back on the fandom train.
Well, didn't they skipped over a book, I'm pretty sure.
For Bridgerton.
Yeah. So they might be going back. Maybe they weren't like ready for that book or it wasn't as juicy. So they might have been like, oh, to avoid like maybe a lackluster season after such a great one.
Sparkly.
You know, they are skipping.
I think like Colin is up next, but technically it should have
Katie
been.
Katie says y'all are not ready for that book.
Benedict. Would have been Benedict.
Yeah, Benedict.
Y'all are not ready for that book. Well, Katie, I'm excited. I'm going to read them. I have a really long TBR, but I'll put them on.
Queen Charlotte was good. Like, I want more from that time. There's so much more to cover.
Queen Charlotte,
a little bit emotionally hurt me as well. So I don't, that's one that's not as rewatchable.
Natasha is hurt, everyone. Okay. But
it was so beautiful too at the same time. Mm-hmm. It was so beautiful. Mm-hmm. I like Natasha. Are you going to say this here? Because I think this is very true.
Oh, yeah. So I definitely think Colleen Hoover could be the next Nicholas Sparks, but way better.
I asked our followers on TTF and mine what their favorite fandoms are and why, because I wanted to see like if any of what we said today resonated with other folks, and also I was like dying to know what fandoms everyone like really really love. We obviously had a lot of Swifties, a lot of Potterheads, a lot of ACOTAR, which duh, like, no surprise there. But Freddie said Taylor Swift, and the why was just obviously, which sure.
Me too.
Acceptable.
Olivia said, Taylor Swift, my entire life experience captured in music and poetry. It's very that healing, is which so is so Christine. It's so real. She has a song for every situation. It does not matter what happened, who broke up with who, like how the breakup went, friendships, mm-hmm. like every situation she has something.
No, her albums are a lot like Potter for me.
Oh, I think Taylor Swift is a lot like Potter for people. I think Taylor Swift is Gen Z's Harry Potter based on how they act.
Oh, interesting. She's also my yes. Harry Potter millennial.
Taylor Swift is everyone's Harry Potter, period.
It's so funny. Now when someone says to me that like they haven't listened to like rap or they haven't listened to Fearless, I'm just like, you have a whole book written by Taylor Why? Swift that you haven't delved into. Like, her albums read like books to me. And like, her songs oh, are like chapters of her life.
That's so beautiful. Oh my God, Christine. Oh my God, I that is so poetic and profound. Her albums read Just like read books like to me. Say books. It again. Say it again. Oh my God. I felt that in my chest. I felt that with my whole chest.
Yeah.
I agree. And sometimes you need to like reread yep. one of Taylor's albums yep. to feel better and to feel seen and to feel heard, just like you do with
and
books.
Connect
wow.
the okay, fucking that was threads. Next level. You can connect so many threads. That's what I do when she has a new
Pop
album.
Off, Christine.
I go back and I like I make a list of all the things it reminds me of and go back and listen for the threads, and then I connect them in my
you make a list
hour long videos.
Yes. That would
yep.
That would make me need to have a lot of therapy if I did that. I already have a lot of therapy. But if I tried to do that.
I did that this week with Marjorie, and I never have truly read her lyrics. And I was sobbing down here on the couch. I was like, God.
The first time I heard Marjorie, I was outside cleaning up Bellamy's shit. And the first line, I knew exactly, like, I was immediately just thinking of my grandparents, and I started to cry. And it was just, like, that experience, her lyrics in that song are so fucking beautiful. There's, like, and it captures the feeling that she's trying to capture so perfectly. Like, I feel like I played it for, like, my mom, and she just didn't get it. Like, people who aren't listening to the lyrics sometimes.
You just don't get it.
She did not feel it. Like, some people just don't listen to music that way, where they listen lyrics first, and I'm a lyrics first girly.
I also think that that's true of like people aren't listening to her lyrics if they think that Folklore and Evermore are like the so like crazy for her and like next level yep. for her, because they're not really looking. Because if yep. you look at Fearless and Speak Now yep. and like all Red. Of her albums have such profound Red, literally all of them. And they're like, oh, mm-hmm. but it's pop, or oh, it's country. So it's not as deep and it's not as like profound. But if you mm-hmm. really like Sabrina Carpenter just did a Spotify single yes. of
I Knew You Were Trouble.
I Knew You Were Trouble.
Oh my yeah. gosh.
And that'll really make you think. You're yep. like, oh my God, these lyrics.
Yep.
Like the lyrics mm-hmm. across her albums are so heartbreakingly good. And I think there's this narrative that Evermore and Folklore are like beyond all of the others. And that is simply
it's
untrue.
Literally
and I will ride or
because
die
they're more acoustic, you can hear the lyrics more.
Yeah.
And that is something that really at first bothered me about 1989 is that it was so poppy that it was hard to hear the mm-hmm. lyrics, because her lyrics are so beautiful. You get lost mm-hmm. in the pop sometimes. And a lot of her, like, country music, a lot of it is, like, very profound. There's, like, the dumb songs, but, like, there's a lot of storytelling going on in those songs.
Oh, my God, yes. Yeah. Oh, I'm a country girly. I will ride or die for country.
So when people say that, I'm like, I don't think you're listening. She did some of the Lover songs, which some of those were harder to hear the lyrics at first, too, like Daylight. She did them acoustic at the one Paris show she did for Lover after it came out. And I was so teary listening to those songs because you hear the lyrics harder because it's less dressed up. And
it's a different experience, so for sure. Okay, people said Percy Jackson. People were saying because it's wholesome and it feels like home. And that's really sweet. Yes. I love that. It's safe.
It is.
ACOTAR, I love all the theories and when cosplayers bring my favorite characters to life. Got me back into reading. I feel like a lot of people had that experience. People said Smut, which people said Fourth Wing because they're excited to unpack everything, talk about the characters. Gilmore Girls because cozy vibes, big problems handled with humor.
Yes.
And I'm watching it for the first time because of y'all's episode. I told y'all that in while we were texting. And it's true. Like, it feels so raw and real, and everything is handled with humor in a way that, like, I wish I could handle things like that. Aaron and Aaron, spelled differently, said Twilight will always have my heart, and Twilight because the fandom talks equal amount of trash and love at the same time.
I love that. How accurate.
I thought it was really good. I was like, true.
Yes.
Shadowhunters, my first fantasy book and completely stole my heart.
Aww.
I love that.
Yeah.
Shadowhunters because of how relatable the characters are and because it's the best escapism.
She's another one. She's very good with the dialogue. So much witty banter. No matter
what. Very good with the dialogue.
No matter what era they're in. It's on point.
It's so good. Okay, and then I had, like, other because people were sending us stuff, and I wanted to include it. This was my favorite, though. Petra said, Purity Rings, Disney era.
Oh, my God.
Just my favorite way anyone has put that era ever. Oh, my God. But it's so true. Demi, Selena, and Miley because I live for the drama, and I grew up with it. And I'm... The Joe Bros purity rings that lives rent free in my head. Like, I think about that. And then when they took it off, and we were all like,
"Where is it?
They took it off.
They had sex.
Where is it?" That was crazy. The fact that we were also talking about them having that
was
a lot.
The media was so concentrated on these youths.
Was so obsessed. These youths.
It was horrible.
These youths.
It's all coming out about Britney too.
Agreed.
Britney, when she was dating Justin, they would all ask Justin, like, so she really values no sex without marriage, and you used to have a purity ring. Like, did you have sex? Like, it's just like, are you kidding?
It's so nasty. It's so nasty. You have to believe we've gotten a little better, but I don't think we have. I think we've just gotten more sly about it.
I think we're also more sex positive now in general as a society.
We are.
Yeah.
That's true. That's true. But we shouldn't be with the youths.
I mean, well, we shouldn't have put, like, all that pressure on them not to be sexual at all. It's just
not to be sexually. Yeah, that's true. Yep. There needs to be an in-between. Yep. Alex said, Critical Role Dimension 20, which I had to look up.
Is that my brother?
And that's like D&D. No, I don't think so. Is it? It's a D&D.
I thought D&D, it first of your brother,
podcast.
Alex loves, like, fucking Critical Role. I'm not joking. Critical Role has like 100 episodes per season, and they're all
it's
2-3
like
hours
super
long.
Famous. Yeah.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh, I know. And
I'm sure you do. I had to Google it.
Months. And he listens to it when he goes to sleep.
Oh wow.
It's like my Twilight.
You know what? I have a podcast I listen to when I sleep because it's like comforting and you're like, okay.
Yeah.
So that's cool because he said, we love seeing adults acting out high fantasy. And that's true. I want to live in that space. Paula said, all Mandalorian for all the wrong reasons, aka Space Poppy, which I'm assuming is Pedro Pascal because she didn't say
it. It's gotta be.
She just assumed I knew. It's gotta be. Star Wars because the universe is so amazing and still expanding. That is a fandom that just keeps growing and growing and growing because they keep adding stuff And it's like, it's so, they're lucky. If you're like really Star Wars deep. Yeah. If you're like a Star Wars girly, like you are constantly being fed. I feel like almost with so much stuff that you're like, wait, what do I do next?
Overload.
Truly.
And then I wanted to point out, Kaya said Marauders fandom. And I really think that that's so cool and so beautiful. I don't know if you guys have other examples of like when a fandom comes out of another fandom and it's like completely fan made, because that is so crazy to me. Raylo. True, Raylo. But also there was real evidence, hard evidence of Raylo.
I mean, so was Marauders, but like people
that's
make
true,
up their
that's
own
true,
stuff.
That's true, but people make up their own stuff. Yeah.
Or like how
I think that's
Ben
so
Barnes
cool.
just like can't escape the James Potter.
He's so into it though. He's serious.
Oh, serious.
He's,
sorry.
He's so into it. He brings it up in every interview. I'm like, okay, so we're casting him, I guess.
I would love to see that. I still want to see that so much.
He's another one that could step on me. Actually, honestly, most people we've talked about could step on me.
Always. We didn't mention Game of Thrones at all this episode.
Oh, and people brought it up. People brought it up.
Yeah.
Best TV adaptation, best characters, even the love to hate
one. Yeah, that's one that I enjoyed the whole thing, even though I didn't like the way it ended on the last episode. But some people are like, the 7th and 8th seasons are shit. And I'm like, the 7th season is where all the women are like, coming into their own. So I think you just don't like seeing
so you
that.
Just hate women. Yeah.
7th's amazing. And I hate that it imploded in the way it did, because I know people who are such enormous fans of the show. And the second like things started going not their way in the last season, they were like, oh, I hate this. I'm never going to watch a Game of Thrones thing again. And I'm like, come on. Like,
you're not going to love everything.
I know.
Like, get over
it. There's so many amazingly well-written shot seasons. Like, are you kidding?
House of the Dragon is really bringing it back, because that shit is good.
Yeah. We are going to skip what right now today, because we are at a two-hour mark. So let's roll into Mary Kisscliff. All right. Natasha was supposed to give us one today, but she must have missed this section, so I have one for us.
Sorry.
And today, Mary Kisscliff, we are doing moisturizer, chapstick, and deodorant. Y'all, what you gonna do?
I am a dry skin girl. I have such dry skin. Same. It is painful. It is horrifying. So I need to marry a moisturizer because I slather. You know slugging?
Yes.
That's me.
I do that on my face.
Yeah, look, I go to
bed.
Yeah. Yep. Mm-hmm. And then a chapstick. I feel like I could use other things for chapstick. Like I don't need chapstick because I can find alternatives.
Like
but
your
I'm not trying to be... Yeah, like my moisturizer. I'm not trying to be stanky. So I'm going to kiss deodorant and I'm going to cliff chapstick.
I am the same. Every portion of my body is moisturized as soon as I get out of the shower.
Yeah,
she's slippery.
My mother did that her entire life and her skin was great. So I'm trying to have great skin too. So moisturizer for sure. We're marrying that. Okay. Chapstick can go to hell and back. I fucking hate chapstick. This is my unpopular opinion about chapstick. It is not. You think that it is moisturizing your lips. It's not. It's just making your lips more, and it makes them peel. You should not be using chapstick.
On the chapstick you that you're using.
No. You should literally only be using Vaseline.
Vaseline.
We need to listen to her.
We moisturize your lips. It just locks in moisture.
Exactly. Locks in your own moisture.
But if they're already dry, then there is no moisture.
Because chapstick is drying them out.
No, I'm using like a completely organic one. I'm not addicted to it anymore. And I use it to moisturize my lips.
Christine,
if you have a retainer.
Christine is a chapstick truther.
If you have a retainer, your mouth is like not able to close all the way. And you wake up in the morning and your lips are a piece of shit. You need to be able to put something on them that isn't Vaseline. Because Vaseline is like a big blob that just sits on top of you.
Vaseline.
I'm
that's
into
all
the blob,
I use.
Honestly.
Well,
Natasha
I just can't blob and eat at
denier.
The same time.
I hate chapstick.
Natasha's a chapstick denier, and Christine's a truther. There it is.
But I did buy chapstick here because I'm a dry girly too. But I love my chapstick.
Wait, then your entire argument is
no,
invalid.
I am in pain without moisturizer too. I need it.
We know your truth. We just heard you were cliffing it, so whatever.
I need it too, but I will use a moisturizer as my chapstick.
You're the one who came up with this.
I did it in 5 seconds before the beginning of the show. Anyway, I love all these things. I love deodorant and chapstick and moisturizer, so I'm going to climb to the bottom of the cliff to get it and bring it back up.
Also, I do have to add that one time I went to a wedding and I forgot to put deodorant on and I was horrified, but I had moisturizer and I had anti-bac my purse. So I anti-backed my armpits and I put moisturizer on them and it fucking worked.
Oh my God. So bad for your skin, probably.
She uses what she has.
That reminds me of the one time when I tried to do the Ninja Warrior ramp at VidCon and I had to slide down it in shorts and ripped off all the skin of my thighs. And I need to disinfect them. So I took a bunch of anti-vac and slathered the back of my thighs and then they were on fire.
Oh my God, Christine. Oh, you guys, I have one story that I desperately need to tell you. It came up during Twilight. So I was in fourth grade when I read Twilight, which is so too young little. To read it, in case anyone is wondering. But I was so into it. And I had one friend, Julia, shout out. I don't know what she's doing now, but I hope she's doing well. And she and I read Twilight together, and we would bite each other.
What?
At recess. Mm-hmm, to the point where there was bite marks. To pretend we were transforming and being vampires.
Oh my God.
And that is the danger of being in fourth grade. Being in fourth grade when you read Twilight, okay? And sometimes I'm like, why didn't I have any friends in elementary school? I don't get it.
They're giving each other hickeys. Because you bit them.
Oh my God, we absolutely gave each other hickeys and we didn't know what they were. And we were like, what is this? So anyways... Felt like I had to shit.
I'm glad you did. That was a great.
Please, that was amazing.
That was a great tidbit.
Katie said she played Warrior Cats at recess. Thank you. Thank you, Katie, for validating me. I did crazy shit at recess because I was into fandom.
Gabby says, I read New Moon in my fifth grade class in the reading corner and Whisper yelled, bastard, when Edward left Bella.
Weird girl supremacy is so true. Slide into my DMs if you also bit your friends when you read Twilight.
All right. With that... the episode today. Chloe, where can we find you everywhere on the internet? Tell us where we can slide into your DMs.
Yes, only if you bit other people.
No one else allowed.
So you can find me at Chloe Laverson, ChloeLaverson on YouTube, Instagram, and TikTok. Also, check out MuggleCast if you're a Harry Potter girly. But come be my best friend on my socials. I literally I just have fun on there being a girly, weird girl piece of shit. So. Oh, and follow us.
Yes.
Do it.
Yes.
Or you're canceled.
We'll put you on Lost so you can have your redemption arc. But we are at Those Forking Fangirls on Twitter and Instagram and on YouTube. Follow us.
And TikTok.
And TikTok and Patreon. And Twitter, if you still use the tweets. We are going to record Tea Time, which is available on our Patreon. We've got some stories to chat about this week. And we put up new episodes every Friday. Our podcast is edited by Alex Polis and Jake Needham with music by Cole Jenkins and vocals by Jenkins. Heather Traska. I blanked on his last name for a second. And our socials are done by Chloe Laverson, who's been here and graced us today.
Sounds like a bitch.
We will see you all next week. Thank you so much for listening. Bye, y'all.
Bye.
And if you have any feedback, leave us comments on all of the places. YouTube, Instagram. We love to hear your thoughts.
Worried about your future in tech? Master new skills, accelerate your team's impact, and redefine what's possible with Pluralsight. We're more than just another online learning platform. We're shattering the skills gap and shaping future generations of technologists. Transform your work. Transform your team. Ready to tap in? Visit us at Pluralsight.com to learn more.